Falcoholic podcast listeners, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Live, now available in audio-only format. Before we get to the show, just want to remind you that you can catch the Falcoholic Live on YouTube at 8:10 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday nights. And if you're interested, we also have a post-game show that goes live right after the games on Sunday or whatever day it happens to be played. So we hope you enjoy this episode, and we hope to see you on YouTube if you're available. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 123 of the Falcoholic Live. I am, of course, your host, Kevin Knight, joined by two illustrious co-hosts this evening. First off, Eric Robinson. He is on Twitter, @_Eric_Robinson. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, man. We get our boys back on the field this Sunday against a hated rival.
Hated. The most hated. Yes.
Undermine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the other division rivalries, they just don't hit the same, you know? Like, they just don't, so.
They're foes. I call them division foes.
Right.
The Bucks and the Panthers, they're division foes.
Yeah, yeah.
They're rivals. There's nothing we respect about them at all.
Yeah. As Eric said, we are facing the Saints this week. It is hate week. Also joining us, Evan Birchfield, at the very easy to remember, @EvanBirchfield on Twitter. Evan, how are you doing tonight?
Great. Yeah, just to piggyback off of Eric, you know, hate week or whatever you want to call it, it's always exciting. You know you hate the Saints more because, like, if this you see the Saints and Panthers playing or the Saints and Bucks playing, I'm favoring the other team. Like, I want the Bucks or Panthers to win. Always want the Saints to lose, especially, like, I don't care about draft picks, whatever. I always want the Falcons to beat the Saints. So, and I think what's special about this rivalry is it doesn't matter what the records are. They always play each other tough for whatever reason. So, yeah, let's get to this.
Oh, yeah, let's get into it. Yeah. Before we get started, guys, just a reminder, if you don't mind throwing a like at the video, that helps other folks on YouTube find us. And all, like, the really hardcore people here are right at the beginning of the show, so I'm almost certain that every one of you are already subscribed. But if you're not, hit that subscribe button. Help us out. You'll get notifications when we go live and all that good stuff, so we appreciate that, too. Set up a little box over here to thank our donors as well. So all you guys listed there, appreciate all you guys have been donating to support the show. And on the topic of the Patreon, I promise it is coming. The Discord is coming. In fact, I invited some Falcoholic VIPs into the Discord so they can attest. Evan can attest that this Discord does exist in some shape or form.
It is real.
It is real, but we're working on it. So thank you to all of you that are asking about that. But yeah, let's get into, before we get to the Saints, because that's the topic of the evening, let's get into the news of yesterday, I guess, which was Tack McKinley getting waived by the Bengals. We had some strong takes about Tack on this show last Wednesday. I assume our reactions about him getting waived by the Bengals due to a failed physical will be equally hot. Eric, as our resident Tack McKinley prognosticator, I'll let you have the first.
I'm the worst for this.
Well, it's a title that we've only had for the last 2 weeks, but you've earned it. You've earned it, buddy.
I get it. when it comes to him, man, you know, nothing surprises me, honestly. There's been some rumors floating around saying that he deliberately failed his physical just so he can be able to have another shot at a team on the West Coast, get closer to home. Who knows? And even if that is true, again, is not much of a surprise. That's just who he is. This guy carries an ego as if he's an elite talent, and quite honestly, he's not. So he's been claimed apparently by the Niners. Good luck to the Niners. And for anybody that wants to continue to say that he beat the Falcons and he won, nothing is going to prove anything until he puts that jersey and pads on and get out there on that field. Until then, he hasn't proved a damn thing. So far, he's whined his way out of Atlanta, got to Cincinnati, failed a physical, which doesn't surprise me because of his injury history, and now he's in San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, I mean, honestly, like, it seems like he's doing all the wrong things, but it's working out for him. So, I mean, I guess more power to him if that... I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to play in Cincinnati. I mean, I guess at least with Joe Burrow, I think there's, like, hope there for the future. And, like, I think... Who is it? Zach Taylor's the head coach there, right? So...
Yeah.
It's not like they're a total dumpster fire anymore, but I think he really wanted to go to a winner, which I don't know why he went to San Francisco, because it's not like they're winning much this year. But, I mean, yeah, it's weird. The whole situation's weird. Like, I just don't believe in rewarding people who complain, you know, like rewarding the guy that yells the loudest. Like, that doesn't really promote good things for your team. And, like, clearly he had to go from Atlanta because Raheem Morris doesn't strike me as a guy that's just, like, cutting bait with people for no reason. So, clearly he had to go for one reason or another. And, you know, who knows what kind of compensatory pick we would have gotten. I mean, it probably would have been minimal, if anything. Like, for the record, like, if we got, like, a seventh for him as a comp pick, it's unlikely it actually would have stuck, because if you look at the comp pick formula this year, people need to remember that only the top 32 comp picks actually work. If there's more than 32, they get canceled. So all of the seventh round comp picks this year have been canceled already. So there are no seventh round comp picks this year because there's too many early ones. So, like, we probably wouldn't have gotten anything at that point, which is why I probably would have traded him for literally anything, just to offload the salary at this point. But, you know, hey, what can we say? What can we do? There's nothing else we can do about it.
So. Say that they even had trade offers or trade partners or anything worth listening to.
Yeah, I mean, Pelissero said they had offers. I mean, we don't know what those offers look like. I mean, it might have been like, you know, conditional seventh. Who knows? But
right, like, that's not okay. Like, we're really up in arms over that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not super worth, like, getting all bent out of shape over, but, you know. I think it's more compounded with, like, the failure to move players last year when they really should have.
Which I understand. Now, I would also understand if they legitimately did have a third or fourth round pick on the table and they said no. I would completely – now, that would change my perception on everything. I would look at that and say, okay, that's stupid, guys. Why you didn't pick that? But if honestly, I don't think – just knowing how other teams think, I don't think a team was that foolish enough to offer a third and a fourth for a guy with his injury history and lack of production.
Yeah.
I think the most that they probably got was a sixth, maybe a seventh. To be quite honest with you, if that's what we're talking over, what we're crying about, like, that's who cares? Like, can anybody remember who the seventh round pick was 5 years ago?
Like, Kamal Ishmael?
5 years ago?
No, I think that was 2012. So yeah. I think that was the only good player from the 2012 class.
Like, we were not really going to get that much for him anyway.
Right.
It is what it is.
Jake Rogers, I think, was the seventh round pick 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who I think is still in the NFL, just not at the Falcons. Yeah. I think didn't he start a game recently for some team? I don't.
I feel like
he did. Yeah, I feel like he started for Denver because of their depth at some point. But
brutal.
Yeah. Brutal. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Like, I agree with Eric. Like, we were probably talking mid day three at best, like fifth round pick ceiling, and most likely 6 to 7. So we're not talking about a massive amount of compensation here. And with someone picking him up off waivers, we do get the cap relief, which isn't much. I mean, it's like $1 million, maybe probably less at this point. So, like, it's a little bit.
Explain this to me. We did get that cap relief when the Bengals did, right?
I think when he was picked up, the Bengals took, like, when you claim someone off waivers, you claim their contract. So I think we were on the hook for any, like, signing bonus, but any base salary that was left, the Bengals would take on. And I think that was maybe like $1 million or something. So yes, the Bengals took on that contract.
By him failing.
I mean, it might have been, but then the 49ers claimed him, I think. So so then the 49ers would take on the contract. So either way, I think it works. So
the Bengals didn't lose any. I'm still trying to figure out how this works too. Like,
yeah,
it's
complicated with the waivers thing.
I kind of rely on you and DW.
yeah. The cap is not simple.
So no one lost. So the Bengals didn't lose anything. They took on his contract. He failed a physical. They let him go scot-free. They're good. Their hands are clean, right?
Yeah, I think because he, like, I don't think the claim was official until he passed his physical. So, so then he, like, re-hit waivers again, and then the 49ers picked him up. I think that's basically what we're looking at. So, yeah, Evan, do you have any takes on that whole tax situation?
Not really. I mean, there's not much more to add. I think it's just a sad situation for the talent that could be there. When you see players just kind of, like you said, crying their way out, it rarely turns out, you know, beneficial to them anyways. But I don't know. You're going from Bengals and then failing and then going to the 49ers, who their season seems like it's pretty much over with how many injuries they have. But, you know, whatever happens, happens. It's out of our hands now, and, you know, we look towards our own roster. I think it's insane, though, because it's like this team just – I mean, even Dante Fowler's on, like, COVID now. Obviously, right. That's, you know, not, like, an injury. It's just he got, you know, probably corona or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like now we're down to, what, Charles Harris and – Steven Means, and I guess Kaminsky will be out there and stuff like that. So maybe we'll see more depth guys. I know there's some guys on, like, the practice squad, like Austin Edwards. He was called up, undrafted free agent. He was called up for one of the games, but he only played one snap, and he graded pretty well on PFF. So maybe we'll
that
see
one
more
snap was killer.
Stuff.
Yeah.
yeah. I mean, I'd like to see more, but I mean, why not at this point? But it just kind of sucks for the fans because literally if he was just, you know, better than average, like, we've been begging for some sort of pass rusher since John Abraham. Like, and we've seen flashes where, like, that one season where Vic Beasley was, you know, led the league in sacks, it was like a lot of people loved Vic Beasley that season. Mm-hmm. We just want some, like, a good pass rusher. And it seems like every time we get our hopes up for one, they burn us in some fashion. And, you know, say what you want about Vic Beasley and not caring about football and stuff, but at least he didn't go out trying to trash the franchise and kind of, you know, being a joker towards it. Now you got where he's tack, you know, he literally tweeted, you know, trying to be funny, I guess, but it's just immature. And I guess I'm just at that age now where it's kind of like, why do, like, how do you think this is going to look good to other teams?
Right.
Where, like, he tweeted, you know, when the Falcons cut him, like, thanks to the city of Atlanta. I'm paraphrasing, you can look it up, but it's like thanks to the city of Atlanta and stuff like that. And then he said the same thing about Cincinnati today,
the exact same thing,
inserted a couple words or whatever. It's just kind of childish to me, and it's like, like, if you're going to act that way, at least be good at what you're doing. And whatever, like, good luck to the 49ers, but I'm just kind of glad we're beyond that situation, and I'm proud of Raheem Morris for doing that, because, you know, I think it speaks volumes that they just kept giving him more chances to do stuff. And, you know, obviously dealing with a groin injury and stuff doesn't help, but Raheem Morris, you know, we don't know what was going on behind the scenes, but the writing was on the wall when he started trashing him on Twitter, and Raheem Morris just booted him, and, you know, that's that.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, it's a shame, you know, considering that he was such, like, a celebrity when he got here, and I think everyone was super excited from his, like, draft day stuff. But, I mean, even that, you know, it's like a great story only gets you so far, you know. And
yeah. Well, and Evan pointed it out, you know, the team, it's not as if the team, you know, didn't pay him when he earned a particular salary, or, you know, the team forced him back from injury and he wasn't healthy. No, the team looked out for him, you know, in those, what, three and a half seasons or whatever, the team did their best they could to make him be as good and as he can be. He just didn't stay healthy, and when he was on the field, he didn't produce. Like, this team sat on their hands when it came to signing free agents and drafting signing edge rushers at free agency or drafting other edge rushers, because they wanted him to prosper. So he can't get
looking back at, you know, how he got pissed when they declined his fifth year option. Like, thank God they did that. Like, can you imagine just like what we know now? Yeah, like, right. In hindsight, it's like, thank goodness they learned their lesson.
There are people, and I'm not going to say names, but there are people, I think you guys probably know who they are, but there are people that believe that the Falcons could have avoided this by just giving him the option, which would have been an awful move. Like you just said, that would have been a terrible move. Like, why? They learned from the Beasley situation. Mm-hmm. So they said, Tack, you're not good enough for a fifth-year option. We're not giving it to you. That was the right move. I don't understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, you have to earn the fifth-year option. It shouldn't just be – like, I think he assumed that he was going to get the fifth-year option. Like, I don't know why you would ever assume that, but that's what he assumed. So, I mean, like, don't ever assume that you're going to just get a fifth-year option, because that's a ton of money.
That's the mentality of some guys nowadays, man. Yeah. They think once they're in the league, they're entitled to every dollar that they ask for. And this is production based,
especially when you're a first rounder. I think that's that kind of confidence where you're like, oh yeah, I'm the shit because I'm a first rounder.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's just not gonna work. It's not gonna work. You know.
My baby will always come. Oh, that's
Yeah, you have to actually be good. Yeah, and maybe Tech can be good. Maybe if he was healthy, you know, his first four years here, maybe he would have actually produced at a higher level, and maybe he would have got the fifth year option. But like, we can't do anything about the fact that he couldn't stay healthy. He could probably do much about that either, unfortunately. So like, you have to go out there and earn your money. You know, no one's gonna give it to you. No NFL teams are gonna play ball when you're acting like a brat and like, It's just that's not a way to be. And, you know, maybe it'll work out for him in San Francisco. We'll see. But, you know, I don't – this attitude generally does not lead to career longevity. So, you know, that is what
I mean,
it is.
Who would have thought, like, you know, going into last year, it's like our two top pass rushers were Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley. And, like, both of them are currently – well, actually, I guess you guys said Tack got claimed, but – you know, for the moment, it's like both of them were without a job, the very next season, and bounced around to two different teams because Vic Beasley's no longer with the Titans, and I think I saw he was visiting the Raiders. I mean, that just speaks volumes about the, you know, constant failures of the Falcons in getting some sort of pass rush, because this isn't normal, like, for your edge rushers to just be like, well, they're gone now, and it's like, well, we're down to, you know, Charles Harris, who, you know, has looked good and stuff, but we got him for what, like a seventh, wasn't a seventh round pick from the Dolphins, and Steven Means, who, you know, he's dealt with injuries and stuff, but we'll see, you know, if he's getting more, obviously more playing time, but how much more reps he's going to get, and, you know, it's just kind of like sad at this point, it just keeps happening. Gotta do something.
Yeah, we got folks asking about updates on Breeze and the Saints, so let's go ahead and transition into some Saints talk, because it is hate week. We know folks want to hear about hate week, so yeah. The Saints are banged up, you know, going into this matchup. You know, the Falcons are getting them at a kind of time of transition. Like, they're going to be without Breeze for probably 2 to 3 weeks at least. You know, he's got the broken ribs, they say, 2 to 3 weeks. He also has a punctured lung. Like, you should not be playing football with a punctured lung. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that may take a lot longer than they're letting on, and they just don't want to be really forthcoming about that. I mean, allegedly, Breeze had a broken rib going into this game, and they didn't disclose it. That could be potentially...
Whatever.
I mean...
Whatever.
I mean, you don't believe that? Okay.
No.
I mean, I don't dislike. I believe the Saints would absolutely lie on their injury report. Like, this is the Saints we're talking about. But I'm also not a impartial source.
You mean seven or nine games? He played at some point with a broken rib, and it didn't affect him at all in any other game until now.
I assume it happened between last week and between the last game and this most recent game. Not that he had it all season.
Well, he may not have had it all season, but they made it seem as if, I guess the report that came out was that he played games with it. So that's telling me he might have had, allegedly, he might have had his injury before the Bucs game two weeks ago.
Yeah.
So again, now you want to bring it up as like, oh, yeah, that also happened.
That's not an excuse for his poor play, okay? No, I mean, and honestly, it's like maybe we'd rather see Breeze because he's, I mean, he's been his usual self in terms of the short passing, and he can facilitate that offense. It's still very well coordinated and very well run, but he absolutely cannot push the ball downfield, and that really limited the Saints' offense. And, you know, it was nice to see as a Falcons fan that that Saints' offense pretty much hamstrung. So, you know, we'll see what happens with all that this week. But, yeah.
With this new attacking style defense that that Raheem Morris is putting together, I would have liked to see this against Breeze, who's a stationary passer who, you know, he can't move. He's not mobile. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You're blitzing Keanu, you're blitzing Debo, you're blitzing Owoken, you're blitzing, you know, even Oliver at times. They're going to get back there. I would have liked to see that against Breeze.
Yeah. Like I said, like it might have been a better overall matchup. But we're going to get Winston this week. I know Sean Payton's being coy about it, but we're getting Jameis Winston. Like, Jameis Winston. Yeah, no. Jameis Winston will be the quarterback the Falcons face on Sunday. You can absolutely.
We're not fooling.
Taysom Hill is not going to be their starter. That was a complete lie, okay? Yeah. If anyone who believed that. I mean, they gave him the money, so really they just lied to themselves, really, but.
But they didn't let him start the second half.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what the hell this is all about, but clearly he's not their backup, and they paid him $18 million for some reason, but it wasn't to be their backup quarterback. I guess it's to be Sean Payton's favorite toy. So, whatever. I mean, I guess that's a great use of money when you're like $80 million over the cap, but, you know, whatever, guys. Saints do you. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be Jameis Winston. There's probably going to be a little bit of a different offense that we're going to see from New Orleans. It's probably going to be more like what the Falcons are used to seeing from New Orleans in terms of Jameis Winston being aggressive.
I don't know. I think, well, and that might have been going back to the second half of the 49ers and Saints. You know, you go back to their first drive or the first couple drives with Winston on the field. You know, it still seemed like Breeze was playing because a lot of the calls for him were short, methodical passes. They really didn't attack deep. He was connecting. I think he started off like 6 for 6 or something like that.
Yeah.
It was still, the offense still looked the same. So I'm wondering, like, okay, are they just really trying to get him going with these quick, easy passes? You know, when you have a new starting quarterback, you just want to get the ball out of his hands so he can catch a rhythm. Is that the case? Or are we really looking at a Saints offense that, regardless who's that quarterback, this is their offense. They don't attack deep. I'm starting to wonder if that is the case. Because, like I said, it looked that way for the first 2 or 3 drives in the second half. They didn't make any changes. They just put Winston out there, dump off to Kamara, slant here, quick out here. You know, it looked the same.
Yeah. I'm curious about that. What do you think on that, Evan? Do you think they're going to try to limit Winston because they're afraid he's going to turn it over if they kind of unleash him in the offense, or do you think they're going to kind of adapt a game plan this week?
No, I kind of think what Eric's saying is correct. I think their offense is just built to be kind of short and then let it turn into stuff because of, you know, they can throw it to Kamara out of the backfield. They can bring in Taysom Hill and do those like ridiculous up the gut runs that for some reason get a first down. It's the most, like, confusing thing ever. Like, I'll see him come into a game, regardless of who they're playing. Taysom Hill lines up. You know there's, like, a 90% chance he's just going to run up the middle. And then he does it, and it gets, like, a first down every time. I don't understand it. The one thing that stood out to me was, like, I thought last week, usually, and maybe it's just not with the Saints, but usually when a new quarterback comes in, they tend to lean on their tight ends a lot. And the Falcons are, like, literally the worst against tight ends, so this will be a matchup to watch out for. But he didn't even throw it. Like, Jared Cook had 0 catches last week when Winston came in, so that'll be something to monitor, because I always thought Jared Cook was, like, pretty good, even though he's, like, messed up lately. But usually they lean on the tight ends, and it seems like that's not what their offense was doing anyway. So yeah, I think that, and the Falcons have been pretty decent lately, you know, with stopping the run, so maybe he's forced to throw deep. I believe Traquan Smith is, like, their deep guy. And he was on the injury report.
Yeah, he was
not sure
DNP.
If he practiced or not.
He was DNP.
Oh, okay, so he didn't even practice. Mm-hmm. So that'll be something to monitor. But I think, you know, they're just kind of, you know, got Emmanuel Sanders, who usually goes short. And obviously Michael Thomas is like, that's all he's good for.
I mean, he's a shell right now. Like, he is not healthy. He's clearly not healthy.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I would expect them to do. And I honestly think that's going to would benefit the Falcons. But, you know, it'll be to be determined. But
yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like,
I think not stretching our secondary out and stuff like that,
yeah,
you know, obviously is going to help us. So.
Right, yeah. I mean, it would be good if they were able to keep the game in front of them and keep it short. It's just, yeah, it's I don't want them going deep on this secondary. I mean, the thing with Jameis is, like, if that were to happen, like, he's liable to make mistakes, especially in an offense that he's probably not all that familiar with. I mean, he's been there, but, like, he's practicing with the scout team. He's practicing with the second string. You know, how much experience does he actually have throwing to all these receivers, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm sure he has some level of familiarity, and he'll get to practice this week. But, yeah, it's I'm more afraid, I guess, of Winston if he's unleashed. But Winston in, like, a dink-and-dunk offense is not a good fit for him. Like, he's just – it's – like, his accuracy is not really his strong suit. Like, his best trait is how he can kind of get out on the perimeter, like, evade pressure and just make some crazy plays. Like, that's really his thing. So if you've got him constrained as, like, a game manager type, that's really not his game.
Right. Mm-hmm. And his decision-making also is what's always questioned with him.
Yeah.
I think this week the approach should be, of course, to still attack him with blitzes, still confuse him. I want these blitz to be, like, literally as disguised as possible.
Yeah.
Do not put your hand with him, because he is able to read defenses and he's able to make the right throw. The thing that always gets Jameis is when he has to make a thought. After, he has to make a quick reaction after the snap.
Yeah.
That's what usually gets Jameis. And normally when that happens, he throws a pick, he holds on to the ball too long, or things happen. When you force him to come off that first read, and you're forcing him to, if he's looking for man and he sees zone and that first read is gone, that's when you want Jameis. Because normally he's like, okay, well, he's panicking a little bit. He makes that next read, and that next read is usually triple cover. So that's the one thing they need to do. Also, he really utilizes tight ends a lot in Tampa, so this week might be the week to kind of keep your eye on Jared
Cook. Yeah, I mean, the Falcons definitely need a game plan around stopping Jared Cook, but that they've needed to do that every time they played the Saints, and that hasn't worked out super well. Want to get in a read here for George Costanza, another $5, brother. Thank you so much, man. We really appreciate your support. So George says, as much as I love Breeze the person, I'm so glad he's not playing Sunday. Falcons are going to make the playoffs, baby. I knew it. Just win, baby. Seriously, though, we are really going to screw up our draft pick. Stupid. So, yeah, I mean, this is what this team does, man. Like, they play terribly, make us think that, okay, well, it's bad, but, like, maybe at least we'll get a good pick. And then they just win a bunch of meaningless games at the end of the year, and then, you know, we don't get the pick. So, that is basically it. I mean, it looks like we at least got a good player with that 16 overall pick. Like, I think AJ Terrell, I mean, he's been the best rookie corner so far. I think he looks very promising. So, like, you can still get a very good player at 16. It's just you have to be a little more crafty with it. You know, it's not going to be the consensus top guy. So,
and their draft slot, their draft placement right now is not an ideal draft slot.
But
what they can use right now with the projections and the way things are going, if they're sitting at the 10th pick right now, if they were able to pick, I think they'll have a number of cornerbacks to choose from.
Yeah.
But that's not really a great need for them right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what you think of what you want to do with Oliver. It probably depends on the new head coach, you know, and the new if they change schemes and all this stuff. I don't think corner would be, like, the worst pick for them. I could see.
I don't think any one of us would be discouraged by getting, like, Patrick Surtain and having
Farley, Surtain. I mean, those are solid, yeah.
Right? It won't. To me, I feel like we all know what the true need is.
We need edge.
We need edge rushers.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a weird edge class. I'm wondering,
it is.
We need, a lot of guys opted out. A lot of guys have underperformed. You know, there's not very many games. Like, it's a real crapshoot. So,
but if you were able to get Surtain and you knew like he was going to be, a starter for the next 8 years or so.
Yeah.
And knowing how Terrell is, I mean, having two guys like that, all of a sudden you don't really need elite pass rush. You just need, better than what we're used to. Average old, all of a sudden having guys like that, will elevate those guys. But, it's kind of up in the air right now. I'm more concerned with how free agency is going to go just because of how our cap room is and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So maybe they will go the cheap route and look towards the draft just because they can't obviously sign a bunch of big name guys. I mean, hell, they already paid Fowler, what is it, $18 million or something?
It's a lot. Yeah, it goes up a lot next year too. But yeah, we're gonna get to some draft takes. I promised people on Twitter we'd get to some draft takes tonight, so we will have some draft takes for you later in the show. Don't worry about that, folks. In the meantime, for those of you joining us just now, if you don't mind throwing a like at the video, that helps other folks find us. We really appreciate that. And for anyone that's not subscribed, hit that subscribe button. We really appreciate that as well. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the Saints matchup, like, the Falcons are, this is not the Saints of last year or the year before. Like, this is a team that is certainly competitive, but they're not dominant. They beat the 49ers, and the 49ers are like the most injured team in the NFL. Like, that team is a shell. and they beat up on a Bucks team that apparently just becomes like turns into a pumpkin in primetime, which is not good if you're trying to be a playoff contender. So that was just a weird game where the Bucks just completely folded in that one. Outside of that, they've not been all that impressive. And, without Breeze, who knows? Traquan Smith, like we said, not playing, or at least injured at this point. I think the belief is that he's unlikely to play. So they're going to be, limited in the receiver core with Michael Thomas isn't on the injury report, but I mean, he's not healthy. He's just not really doing much. Emmanuel Sanders is a good player. He's getting up there in age. He's mostly a short target at this point. Alvin Kamara is obviously awesome, but is he going to be enough? Like, against the 49ers, who have, a backup quarterback and almost no healthy weapons on the entire team, they're down to their fourth or fifth string running back at this point. The Saints shut them down and they could do whatever they want. I mean, they were able to coast in the second half without Breeze. But the Falcons offense is probably going to be back to full health with Calvin Ridley. Ridley was limited today, but that's, a fairly good sign for his eventual availability. The Falcons are ready to go. They've had success in the past against the Saints defense, and the Saints defense isn't as good as it has been in past years. So, this is a unit that the Falcons could put up points on. And when the Saints are behind, they are a completely different team. They are not a team that is built to really come from behind this year. Again, with the defense struggling, with the offense really restricted, we'll see what happens there. But what's your overall thoughts on this matchup, Eric? Do you think that the Falcons do have the advantage going into this one for a change?
Well, I think you can say that. This is probably going to be the first time, all year that this offense is completely healthy across the board. We've seen, starting from that Dallas game, we saw injuries in certain spots on the offensive side of the ball from Julio or Ridley. So we'll see how that goes. I think right now in this particular situation with this team, they're not only are they healthy, but they got a little rest. So I as much as I want to say they have an advantage, I keep thinking about Dirk Koetter, man.
Well, Dirk Koetter obviously is not an advantage, but I can't spend that. Yeah.
I can't really say that they do. I can't really say that they don't. I do like their matchups in certain spots in this game. I will say this. This is a really good Saints run defense. So if anybody's out there hoping that they're able to put up 143 yards on the Saints on the ground like they did in the first matchup last year, probably not going to happen this week.
Yeah.
they're probably going to have to win with the arm of Matt Ryan. Not saying he needs to throw the ball 40 times a game, but they're probably that aspect of the offense is probably going to have to win it for them.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's a better matchup pretty much universally. I mean, the Falcons aren't really a great running offense anyway,
right.
And they never really will be under Dirk Koetter, aforementioned. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. They're like, on paper, I think the Falcons have a better shot in this matchup than most people probably think based on record. You know, the Saints are injured. They're making a quarterback change. Quarterback changes have traditionally not been something that's been good for the Falcons. So who knows with that? I mean, at least with this one, they get to plan for it for a week as opposed to it happening mid-game. But really, that's the biggest wild card is, like, what does Sean Payton do with Winston? Like, does he make a difference? Does he make a change? Does he change the way the offense works? Or does he force Winston to play conservative? Like, I don't think, you know, like we said, like, I don't think Winston's a good fit for a game manager type of role. I think he thrives when allowed to kind of run free, but that's also his biggest weakness because he doesn't make great decisions with the football. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't with Winston, but I think that's the only way you win with him. Like, I mean, unless you think you're just going to dominate the other team with your defense, but, you know, Cam Jordan also DNP today. So, like, you know, their pass rush has not been effective even with Cam Jordan in there. So it'll be, you know, maybe we'll see Caleb McGarry shut him down again. That was fun last time. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think this is a great matchup for the Saints. I think the Falcons do have an advantage in terms of going into it more healthy. They're coming off a bye. They're kind of catching their biggest rival at a very opportune moment. Do you think that's enough, Evan, for them to be able to actually come away with the win here?
Yeah, and honestly, it's like I want to believe in Raheem Morris because he should be 4-0 since taking over. And now he's had a bye week to prepare for the Saints. So, like, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and just hope something happens. And honestly, it's like it's kind of scary, but I actually feel confident going into this game where the Falcons have a realistic chance. Will they shatter that and lose probably 30-10? Yeah, I mean, probably.
Probably, yeah.
Like, I feel like, for some reason, and I can't explain it, I feel good going into this game. Everybody, you know, I do the injury report for the Falcoholic every day during the season, and this is the healthiest day I've seen, which you would hope coming off a bye week. But the only person who didn't practice who isn't on a COVID list was Matt Gono, who's just got like an illness or sickness or whatever. So, you know, this is, they're far more healthy than the Saints are. They've had 2 weeks to kind of prepare for this game. I mean, I'm you know, I shouldn't be, but I'm kind of excited for this game. To see kind of like what, because we know, you know, under Dan Quinn or whatever, how this kind of would go. But with Raheem Morris, I want to see what kind of preparation and if it pays off, you know, when you have this extra time.
Yeah. Now joined by Adnan Ekic. Adnan joining us a little late. He did warn us ahead of time. This is, you know, this is okay, folks. Adnan had permission to show up late, okay? He talked to the teacher first. No, Adnan, how are you doing tonight, Adnan?
I'm doing well. Are we talking about bye weeks? God, this is a great opportunity for me to shit on Dan Quinn for losing after every single bye week.
Yes, I was actually just about to do that. So why don't you take over with that one, you know, and give us, you know, if this was a normal bye week, if Dan Quinn was still the head coach, what would you expect this week?
Well, considering the fact that a few years ago we came off our bye week and lost to a Dolphins team whose, I think, special teams coach was doing rails of blow. It would have been in fairness, to give Quinn credit, I think we came off our bye week and beat the Saints last year, so that was after we made those defensive changes where Dan Quinn opted not to be the play caller anymore. But man, it was so rough all those years. Just like, you have the week off, you're expecting something great from the team the next week, and then it's like, you know, they come out super flat. I have no idea what they were doing on those bye weeks. Hopefully it'll be different this year with Raheem Morris.
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Like, can Morris do something that Quinn really struggled with, which was actually use the bye week effectively and not come out completely flat after it? So, I mean, I'm hopeful. We will see what happens there. We were just talking about this matchup, and like it seems like on paper that the Falcons probably should be favored. They're healthier. You know, they have some favorable matchups, like New Orleans secondary has been underperforming. They haven't been nearly as dominant on defense, and the offense has been pretty mediocre. So, like, if the Falcons can get a lead in this game, the Saints are really a team that is not built to kind of come back, and that's already, you know, bitten them several times this year. So the Falcons' penchant for getting out to, you know, a big early lead might actually work out pretty well in this game, in my opinion. But, you know, we'll see if they can do it. But, yeah, these games are always weird, too. Like, that first game last year, like, Falcons' defense was a dumpster fire, and they just held the Saints to, like, no points. So, I mean, I don't understand.
They got, like, six sacks.
Yeah.
You guys know what the spread for this game, too, right? They're only 4.5-point favorites.
Yeah.
Which says a lot for a team that's in first place and, what, a half a game out of the number one seed playing against a team that was 0-5.
Yeah.
I mean, in fairness, they are missing their star quarterback. Well, they're missing their quarterback, and they're like the Walking Dead after their brutal game against San Fran last week. And to be honest, I remember a few months ago when we were breaking down the schedule, which is what we do in the middle of the dead period in April. Yeah, I remember I said that, oh, yeah, they have that big game against the San Francisco 49ers. Yep. That's going to be a brutal game. It's going to be a physical game. And, I mean, it was. In fairness, I wasn't expecting the 49ers to be, you know, with all of their second stringers, but it was still a physical game.
Right.
Yeah. And it ended up working in the Falcons' favor in a way. The entire schedule did in regard to the Saints, because we're coming off a bye week. Last year, I think the Saints had a bye week 8 as well. This year, they had the 49ers, and the second matchup against the Saints, they're coming off a West Coast trip in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While the Falcons will be at home.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is our best chance at the Saints. Like, this is our best chance to get that to get that win, to avoid the sweep and potentially pull off a sweep later. So.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, it feels like Arthur Blank slipped the schedule makers, like, you know, a 1-5.
Slipped to a 5 spot. Yeah.
I remember we pointed it out, you know, in the schedule release show, that this was, to pay attention to this because of the fact that they're getting the Falcons coming off a bye and they're playing. Now, we didn't say that the Niners were going to injure them, but we felt like this game against the Niners was going to be a physical one, just like it was last year. And lo and behold, it was.
It
might have cost them some key players. So, and as Adam pointed out again, keep in mind, they're coming off a trip to Denver the week before playing them again. So, you know, playing in that altitude, that tires you out a little quicker. So you never know. And that next game may equal a bad start. Second matchup drops.
Exactly, and like the Saints, like that's the thing with this Saints team that's different from previous Saints teams. Like previous Saints teams, it was like they had like 2018, 2019, they had this great defense and they weren't really limited offensively. In fact, in like 2018, they were explosive. 2019, you know, we started to see the decline of Breeze. They were a little bit more conservative, but like this year, they're not explosive anymore. I mean, maybe with Jameis that changes. I guess we'll see, but. Like, this is not an offense that's capable of really closing down a big deficit in a hurry. Like, they're completely dependent on Alvin Kamara in that run game. They're dependent on dump-offs. And, like, that's good for, like, long, sustained drives. But that's not the way to win if you're behind by a lot. If they do have a slow start, you know, in a couple weeks, too, after that West Coast game, if the Falcons get up, 16-plus points, they're less likely to blow it against a team built like this. I mean, and you probably could say that for the Bears, too. Like, it's not like the Bears were an explosive offense and they blew that one. But that was with Quinn still here, so maybe we can, forget about that. But, we'll have to – like, Mark Gobby's asking, do we think ATL can pull off the sweep? And, like, I mean, they can. Obviously, they have to win this game first. We'll see what happens.
It's very difficult to beat an NFL team twice in 3 weeks.
It really is.
I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
Like, well, we saw a picture-perfect example in 2015 when we got our brains beaten up in Carolina, 37-0, and they were 14-0 2 weeks later, and we beat them in Atlanta. So it's very difficult, and that's why I think it'll be a split either way.
Probably.
But however, if we win this game, I will hype myself up in 2 weeks, and I'll be screaming sweep on the live show before that episode. So just fair warning. And same thing with the Bucks as well.
Yeah.
This will make my season. I really don't.
I mean, it would just be nice. Like, it's always nice to sweep the Saints.
Just like last season. It was the same exact scenario. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just get one win. That's all I care.
Yeah.
I don't care. They can lose every other game for the rest of the year. But if they get one win over the Saints, I'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. We just need to make sure we get one win. I don't care which one it is. We just need to get one. That's the most important thing. So, yeah, I mean... So I do think they're in a good... This is probably the best chance Atlanta's had in recent years to sweep the Saints. Like, the Saints are a weaker team than they have been. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I'm excited about it. I think Atlanta's defense, like, matches up well somehow with the game that the Saints want to play. Like, Atlanta's run defense is good. You know, they've been more reliable at shutting down this kind of underneath stuff as opposed to getting, you know, blasted deep. That's really been their problem. I think they've given up more big plays in any other defense. So, like, if they can keep it in front of them, this team is pretty solid on defense. It's when teams start getting desperate and start launching everything downfield that they find out, like, oh, wait, this Falcons team actually can't cover. Like, why weren't we doing this before? I don't know why you weren't doing it. It's pretty obvious to me, but, you know, whatever. It helps us, so that's fine. But, yeah, I mean, either way, I guess, in my opinion, like, the Falcons win either way. Like, if the Falcons don't win, it helps their draft pick. The Falcons do win, we get to beat the Saints. So, like, either way, it's a good thing, honestly. So, now
I think what'll be interesting, you know, when's the last time we played in New Orleans and there's, like, no crowd?
Right.
Like, you know, like, I think we underestimate how much of an impact that has on the players. Like, I know they pump, you know, crowd noise in this year and stuff like that, but it's usually, like, at least from my, I've never been to one of their games in person in New Orleans, but it seems super loud when the Falcons are playing them in New Orleans, whether it's prime time or on, you know, Sunday at 1 o'clock. So I think that'll be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, it'll be different. It'll be different for sure. So maybe it'll make it easier. I mean, I do wonder, like, if the Falcons can pull off the sweep of the Saints. Like, say the Falcons, let's just assume one thing over the next, you know, the remainder of the season. Say the Falcons sweep the Saints. How are you feeling then about the Falcons' chances of, like, pulling off some sort of miracle and finishing, you know, 8-8, 9-7 if they sweep the Saints? That's the only data point you know.
Hey, you're speaking my language.
Yeah,
now.
You're telling me there's a chance.
You're talking my language.
People are asking about it, okay? Like,
Look, so the NFL is saying that we could get an eighth spot, we could get a fourth wild card spot because of the COVID stuff, and it hasn't been necessary yet. Right now, we'd only be a game and a half back from that spot, and that spot is free falling Chicago, who's lost four games in a row. So, hey,
you're telling me there's a chance.
There's
and Minnesota's climbing, but we got a tiebreaker.
We actually have a tiebreaker over someone.
The only team we have a tiebreaker against.
Yeah. Eric's ready to leave.
Eric is disconnected. Yeah. No, like, it's extremely unlikely that the Falcons will make the playoffs. Like, extremely unlikely. They'd be, like, the second 0-5 team to ever make the playoffs. So.
I just feel like if this team made the playoffs, it's a 24-2 game waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're not going to be good in the playoffs, but...
embarrassing loss that's going to look... You're going to look at it and say, well, why the hell did they make the playoffs?
Yeah. I don't know. I disagree slightly because they'll be really hot going into the playoffs.
Yeah, if they do pull it off, like,
it won't be like 2011 where they were just, like, sputtering here and there, like going into that Giants game. Like, they will have to be playing their best football going into the playoffs.
Right.
And we know how important it is not to peak too early, as we saw in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, like, to make the playoffs, they have to beat the Saints twice probably and the Bucks twice probably. Because their best shot is still winning the division. That's always the best way to get to the playoffs. But, like, you know, if you sweep the Saints and you sweep the Bucks and you beat Kansas City, like, then all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh, you just swept two, like, contenders and just beat the reigning Super Bowl champions, maybe at that point we start having a different conversation because this team is completely different. But they still have to do those things. Like, at this point, overall, they haven't done those things. So
also, they, you know, if they make the playoffs, even with, you know, the NFL potentially expanding it, Raheem Morris has a great shot. I mean, like, wouldn't he be the favorite to be the head coach?
I mean, I don't know. Situation. We'd have to see. Yeah, I mean, yeah, if they pull off some sort of miracle, like if they win playoff games, sure. You know, Raheem Morris is probably going to be the coach.
Well, I mean, if they make the playoffs at this point, I mean, because the you know, this second half of the season's, like, brutal.
Yeah, I mean, if they make the playoffs, if they make the playoffs by getting into, like, the eighth seed and, like, an extra playoff spot year, like, I just... I don't know how meaningful it is. Like, if they're like 7-9 and make the last playoff spot or 8,
but I mean, like, that's a hell of a recovery from, you know, starting 0-5. I mean,
it is, but like, I think they also realize, like, they've been bitten twice now by putting too much stock in like a late season rally, so they might be less interested in that. I mean, as long as they get rid of Dirk Cutter, I guess I don't care. Like, if you want to keep Raheem Morris after some miracle, as long as you just kick Cutter the hell out of here, I don't care. Like, fine. Get a real offensive coordinator, then we can talk. But, like, if any scenario involves Dirk Cutter, no. Absolutely not. Like, no. Just no.
I agree that if this team is 7-9 and makes it via that eighth spot and then, like, gets knocked out in, like, immediately, then it's like, yeah, let's go find a new coach. Like, I don't think that's enough to keep Raheem Morris.
It's, I don't,
like,
think so either.
You literally had, like, a COVID loophole to, like, get to the playoffs. That's not the same as rattling off, like, what, 7-8 straight wins?
Right.
To make it as an actual wild card team?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think the team knows that, too. Like, this is a weird season. Like, this is their, like, they're probably going to be the hottest team. Like, Houston may or may not actually go after another coach. I guess we'll see there. There really aren't any other intriguing openings at this point. I mean, maybe the Lions move on from Patricia. Maybe the Vikings, if they don't pull off this miracle, maybe they decide to move on from... I mean, I don't know. But, like, I don't think the Vikings are really anywhere near the Falcons in terms of desirable coaching. They're stuck with Cousins for, like, 2 or 3 years. Nobody wants goddamn Kirk Cousins. Like, that is not a situation any offensive coach is going to be into. The Jets, that's laughable.
It depends on your view of Trevor Lawrence, because, you know, there's some coaches that just, like, that they would rather just be with a generational talent, tie themselves to someone like that.
It's the Jets. The Jets will ruin anything they touch, and I feel so bad for Trevor Lawrence, but, like, this is that team is such a dumpster fire. Like, are they even gonna get rid of Gase? Like,
if they keep Gase, then you've got a point. But yeah. I don't know. It depends on who their next head coach is.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like, it's likely that the Falcons will be the hottest destination for someone who maybe is interested in winning soon. Because if it's the Jets, it's a rebuild. Like, even if you get Trevor Lawrence, that team is a disaster. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I think they're gonna have their pick for the most part. I mean, so that's a good thing. And I think, like, if it'd be one thing if the Falcons were picking from scraps, you know, and they were like, oh, well, Morris did a really good job as the interim, you know, we'll just give him another chance because we don't really have, you know, an interesting candidate to bring in. But, like, if they've got, like, Arthur Smith on line one, Eric Bieniemy on line two, Brian Daboll on line three, like, that, I just don't really see them. Like, are you really going to pass on the next, like, Sean McVay / Kyle Shanahan type coach to keep your interim guy? Who?
Yeah, and also, like, have to give Dirk Cutter an interview for the head coaching job as well. Being the continuity that it would bring to the offense.
That, you know, that third year of the Dirk Cutter system. Yeah, that third year of Dirk Cutter.
We love continuity out here.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Don't you put that evil on me. I will not. I will not entertain Dirk Cutter sticking around. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, so we'll see what happens there. You know, I think the Falcons are favored, and I would like to see them win this game. I think they can. They can beat the Saints. That's the title of the episode. They absolutely can. So that would be cool if they did. Let's see them do it, you know. I mean, Southside 12, like, you're absolutely right, man. Like, Dirk Cutter is the biggest concern about this game because – we know when he faces a half decent defense that that scheme gets exposed, because it's not really much of a scheme. It's just like, okay, line up and beat them. And it works great, you know, against Denver, right? Who have their two starting corners out and can't cover the broadside of a barn. And, you know, it works great against these teams with trash secondaries and bad defenses. But the second his defense his offense comes up against even a competent, even a mediocre defense, it doesn't look at anywhere near as good. So we'll see. You know, can he do something interesting this week? I don't know. I doubt it. Will that be enough for the Falcons to win? Maybe. Maybe, probably. I mean, I don't think they have to do a whole lot against this Saints team. This isn't the dominant force that they used to be. So we'll see. And, you know, also Jameis Winston is the big wild card here.
You never know, Jameis.
There was ever a week for Cutter to resort to those 500 plays.
We need to get past the first 100, because I feel like we're still stuck on those.
But they're all variations of run up the middle.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's just like, it's just 500 pages of, like, you know, run up the middle no matter what. Just circled, you know.
I'll give him for maybe once, I'll give him a little bit of credit. Last year in the first matchup, he did a couple things here and there that I liked, that he took advantage, you know, they were able to get big plays on the Saints defense. Now, they didn't really gash him a whole lot. I think they only had like 315 total yards, something like that. But they had 143 yards on the ground, so they were able to stick to the run, and they won time of possession in that game. They didn't force Matt to throw it often, but when he did throw it at certain times, he picked up crucial first downs. Let's just hope Cutter sticks to that same formula.
What won us that game last year? The third down conversion.
Yeah, yeah.
Because every single third down, it seemed like, I don't have the stats in front of me, I think we were something ridiculous, like 10 of 12 on third down conversions. Like, it was just, when we got into third downs, we just broke their will. Like, you could tell that we broke the Saints' spirit, like, on defense. Because every single time we would convert it, no matter what the down and distance was. I think one time they had us perfectly covered, and Matt Ryan scrambled for a first down. And then you could really tell by the body language that they were like, are you, like, kidding me?
Matt Ryan's been an elite scrambler this year, okay? Like, everyone who said they needed a mobile quarterback, all right?
And number one, according to PFF. Yeah.
He is a dual threat, all right?
Dual threat quarterback.
An elite dual threat.
Yes.
Legitimately, statistically, he is. Like, PFF has him as the number one dual, like, quarterback outside the pocket in the NFL this year.
Yes. Well, I mean, like, that's the thing with Matt Ryan. Like, yes, he's had to play in, like, 15 different schemes over his career, but, like, he's picked up the skills from all of these different schemes, and he can now incorporate them, you know, effectively. Like, now he's, like, after his years in Kyle Shanahan's offense, he's a much better scrambler. He's much better on boots and rollouts. Like, he's got some mobility. Like, it takes him a minute to, like, get going, you know? Like, it takes him a minute to actually, like, move a little bit. But, like, he's smart with when he decides to run, for the most part. Like, I think that's an underrated part of his game. So, you know, I'm excited about that. see Matt Ryan gash the Saints on the ground. That'd be pretty great. But he's, you know, young Matt Ryan. He's the new Kyler Murray for Atlanta, so...
with this being a sound run defense, they're gonna have to be efficient with the run calls, man. Like, you can't. This is probably, as much as we've been saying, as much as we've been wanting them to run the football to a better volume this year, this is one game we're looking at. We're saying, okay, let's not run the ball a lot.
Right. Yeah. It's, and we'll see it. Like, Dirk Cutter's gonna run the ball a lot because he's an idiot. You know, like,
run the ball. Okay. All right.
I don't know what you want me to say, but, like, he's going to run the ball a lot. He's going to run the ball a lot on first down. He's going to run the ball a lot on second and long. Like, that's his thing. He does that. Like, he is not clever. Like, he does what he thinks he needs to do. Like, I need to establish the run, or they're going to key in on the pass. Like, they're going to key on the pass either way, because guess what? The run game isn't good. Like,
every defense is going to key in the pass when you're playing Julio and like, really.
So really, the run game should be better. It's just not, because... it's got, you know, the creativity of, you know,
and the timing of it is bad. Like, he's like, we're calling out the run plays. Like, that may not be the time to run. Keep a defense off balance.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it. Like, this is going to be, you know, another Dirk Cutter grievance session. But it's like, you look at this team on second down, and they're the most ineffective second down team in the league, is basically what it says. Like, they are so conservative on second down that it almost like offsets how aggressive they are on first down and successful they are on first down. Like, it's like they're actively working against themselves on second down. Like, Dirk Cutter's like, oh, well, my deep shot failed, so I guess I better, like, call a screen, you know, so we can get that third and short. Yeah, don't do that. Like, guess what? Your deep shot didn't work? That means you have to be more aggressive on second down to offset the fact you didn't get any yards on first down. But he's trapped in this old system of, like, well, if my pass doesn't work, I have to try to get yards, guaranteed yards on second down. I don't care if it's one, I don't care if it's three, but we're getting yards. And, like, that's not how the NFL works.
The Saints have a very good linebacking core, and they're a very good run defense. I think they just broke some record for most consecutive games without allowing a 100-yard rusher. But what plays into that is the fact that their secondary has been so piss poor for the most part in that string of games that teams just, like, realize that they don't have to run against the Saints. They can just burn them through the air.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about a game where, you know, Marshawn Lattimore was a limited participant in practice. I think he left the game early. The Saints somehow still think that Marshawn Lattimore can guard Julio Jones one-on-one. So they're going to, like, have their egos, like, you know, up to here with that. So they're going to put Lattimore on Julio one-on-one. And I think this is a great opportunity, especially when he's hobbled. When he's healthy, Julio gets the better of him. But when he's hobbled, like, we have to take advantage of that matchup. And we have to take advantage of Calvin Ridley against their secondary corners, who've historically not been very good either.
Yeah.
So
Calvin get one-on-one with PJ
Williams. PJ Williams has a family. Oh, man, you wanted to see Calvin Ridley on PJ Williams? Man, he dusted that kid last year. Oh, my goodness. Dirty.
Remember Calvin Ridley's first game, or first game against the Saints, he had like three touchdowns against them. And it was, I think he should have had a fourth, but there was a pass interference in the end zone as well.
Yeah, demoted.
Yeah.
Demoted. They
Yeah, they benched him in that game. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they brought in Crawley.
Yeah.
Remember that? They re-signed King Crawley after that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that was a good game. I enjoyed that game. But yeah, I mean,
up until Brian Poole and I think it was Robert Alford completely missed that shot on Drew Brees.
Yeah, that was all.
The play where Vic was hanging out in the tunnel?
No. Vic was hanging out in the tunnel in overtime when they had like first and goal from the one where Brees. That was the play to tie the game. I think it was on second or third down
from the tunnel.
Yeah, that was a play where Brees spun like away, where both our players had a free shot on him outside the pocket. And you just know every single Falcons defender from the past 13 years. Yeah, imagine just having that free shot on Drew Brees, every single one. But, you know, they completely blew it.
And
I think that's what got them cut at the end of the season.
Probably. Just that one play. Yeah.
I remember watching the Twitter timeline after that play happened, and I don't think I've ever seen so many WTFs on the timeline.
Yeah, that was brutal. That was brutal.
Like what the?
Yeah, that was a brutal play. I don't want to relive that one any more than we have to. But yeah, I mean, the Falcons have great matchups against these corners. Marshawn Lattimore's not healthy. Julio Jones is healthy. Like, I know there was some concern about, oh, is Julio still number one at the beginning of the season because his numbers were down. I think we know now that that was, you know, injury-related. Like, Julio's numbers are great now. Like, Julio's been just dusting kids. So, like, Julio's fine. Calvin Ridley's great. You know, they have – and they clearly have tertiary options. Like, Russell Gage has been a little more quiet, but he's good. Alameda Zacchaeus is clearly good. You know, they have other guys out there that they can use. It just comes down to Dirk Cutter, and like that's the big issue. Like, Dirk Cutter does not maximize this talent. Dirk Cutter does not maximize this offense. He's barely scratching the surface of what this talent is capable of, and it's really sad, and it makes me mad every time I talk about it, and I'm sure it makes all of you wonderful people mad too, which is probably why you come here to hear me bitch about Dirk Cutter. But like it's just sad, and like this team probably be a hell of a lot better without him, but we're stuck with him, and he just needs to get it together. So please get it together, Dirk. Like, stop running on second and long, for God's sake. Like, if you learn one thing, just stop running on second and long. It's a waste of time. And no, that one time that you ran a draw and you got 12 yards to Todd Gurley on second and long does not justify that decision, okay? Like, that does not justify that decision. So stop it. Stop it.
It reminds me of a few years ago, not even a few years ago, a decade ago, when the Hawks had Josh Smith, and he'd be pulling up with those long twos and three-pointers to the point where the fan base, everyone would scream no every time he'd gear up for a shot. He'd make one. After he makes one, then it's over. He's going to shoot the next 10.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's ready. He's ready. Yeah. Viograph 56 says we need more Dirk slander. We'll have more. Yeah, we're going to have more. We just need to get in some other takes in the meantime. But, yeah, I know Viral also asked, like, who would we replace Cutter with as offensive coordinator? I assume he means, like, I think he was asking more, like, if we got an offensive head coach, who would the new offensive coordinator be? And, like, that honestly probably depends almost entirely on the coach. Like, it's probably going to be their favored assistant. Like, Bienemy would probably bring his, like, favorite guy from Kansas City. Arthur Smith would be the same from Tennessee. I mean, they might bring guys from other teams. Who knows? But
yeah, they'll be the primary play callers for the most part.
Yeah, they will be. So, yeah, it'll be interesting, certainly. But that's a tough one to predict. Like, if they bring in a defensive head coach, we can all just, you know, pack it in. But I don't know who that would be. Like, if they
Mike Nolan, baby.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, please.
They'll bring in Mike McCarthy as the OC after he gets fired in Dallas.
I mean, yeah, I hate to say I told you so, Dallas, but I told you so. anyone who hires Mike Nolan, you know, I think they were asking for it. They were asking for it, for sure.
What are we going to do when Dirk Cutter is gone, though? Like, he generates so much content for us.
I know. It's going to be dark times. We'll probably dedicate at least one show to, like, celebrations that he's gone. But, yeah, I mean, whoever the next guy is, I mean, has big shoes to fill, right? Like, we're that's the problem with having a team with this much talent is, like, you can't just be at, like, a fringe top 10 offense. Like, we're not going to be satisfied with that because we know this team could be a lot better. Like, you need to come, like, with this talent, if you're not putting up a top 5 offense every year, like, there's a problem. Like, it's probably a scheme problem. It's not a Matt Ryan problem. It's not a wide receiver problem. It doesn't seem like it's going to be an offensive line problem. I guess maybe the running back position is, like, our weakness right now, but we can add a running back on early on day 3 or late on day 2 and probably, you know, have that problem solved. So, like, it's not a tight end problem. You know, where's the problem? It's none of those things. So it's probably the offensive coordinator problem. So that's, you know, just saying, no pressure, but whoever comes in here is going to have to actually do something. And honestly, it's really not that hard, I think, to be good. Like, I just think there's a lot of nepotism and there's a lot of coaches that, quite frankly, don't really deserve to be where they are. You know, this is a league that's built on, let me just say it, mediocre white men just using their connections to keep getting jobs. And there's a lot of deserving assistants and deserving college coaches and deserving people.
I went there,
you know. I'm not saying, like, there's plenty, like, there's obviously a lot of minority candidates that deserve it. There's a lot of white candidates that deserve it too. But it's like these old guard coaches are holding back the league. Like, and, you know, it's all based on connections. And it's like that in every industry. It's not just football, but it's sad because we're stuck.
I was going to say, that's just America.
Yeah, that's America. That's American values right there, folks. But, like, yeah, it's sad because especially in football, we're stuck watching an archaic offense that's, like, pretty much strangling what is probably one of the 3 or 4 most talented offenses in the NFL. It's being strangled, and it's a fringe top 10 offense because of Dirk Cutter. And it's sad. And I hope that changes next year because we don't have very much time left with Ryan and Julio. And I'm hopeful that it will change, but, you know, that's where we are right now. It's sad. So, let's get into some viewer questions, some draft takes, all that good stuff. If you guys have questions, throw those in the chat. Put in an @TheFalcoholic, and we'll try to get to as many as we can. We'll try to get to some draft takes here. And also, reminder, if you have an absolutely burning question that you can't go without, you can always donate. The link is in the video description. And I will be contractually obligated to read and answer your question. You can do that as well. Also, like and subscribe, all that good stuff. You guys know the drill. So we appreciate all you guys for tuning in as well. But this week I was doing some draft articles I was looking at. some top edge guys, top corners, top safeties. And there is some talent this year, certainly. I think, you know, the Falcons are going to have to be really good with their first three picks, right? Because they have a lot of spots to fill. They pretty desperately need an edge defender, right? I think that's the top need. They pretty desperately need a safety because they Keanu Neal and KZ are both free agents. Ricardo Allen could be a cap casualty. Like, they desperately need a safety to start if, you know, one of those guys doesn't come back. I guess I'm kind of on the record as thinking that they're probably going to find a way to bring Neal back, just because I don't think you can replace all your starting safeties in one season. But a lot of that probably depends on, you know, the NFL's cap situation, and if they hit this, like, disaster scenario, $175 million cap. I'm on record saying I don't think the NFL is going to let that happen, because that would be a disaster for the league. But anything's possible, I guess. But let's go around the horn while we get some questions in here. Odd, I'll let you go first because you got here late. Like, what right now is the biggest need for this Falcons team, in your opinion? Other than offensive coordinator, because we covered that.
I think it's safety. To be our, like, right now, we're going into next season.
I guess going into next season, but, like, yeah, 2021 draft.
If it's going into next season, then it's safety, because right now the only safety under contract is Jalen Hawkins, whom we got in the fifth round. I don't know if I actually couldn't tell you, to be honest, if we're going to bring back Keanu Neal or not, because of the cap space situation. It could depend on the last 7 games of the season. Keanu looks like he's getting his feet back from under him after the past 2 seasons of season ending injuries. He kind of looks like the same player, and hopefully that continues. And I think if he does prove that he is back completely in the second half of the season, I can definitely see us possibly freeing up some cap for him if we do some restructures. I think Ricardo Allen's a goner, and he should be, given the fact that he'll save $6 million in cap space.
Yeah.
KZ, I think, is gone as well. But, you know, I think right now, as it stands, it's safety. But, you know, that could change depending on what they decide to do with Keanu Neal.
Yeah, I would say, like, the most likely free agent to get brought back is Keanu Neal, just because, like I said, it's going to be difficult to replace both safeties in one offseason. But that's going to depend on, you know, everything else that's going on. Evan, what's your thought on the biggest need for this team going into next season?
I think it's edge, as it is always. Going into this season, I thought it would be linebacker, but surprisingly, that's, I think, a huge strength for them right now, just seeing how Foy's taking that next step. Even Michael Walker in, like, limited action has been great. And Deion Jones is still good. But, I mean, you look at, like, just at edge specifically, Fowler's got 2 sacks. Charles Harris has 2 sacks. But, like, everybody else pretty much has 1. There's no tack anymore, so there's no, like, you know, looking towards a future thing. I don't think anybody's been blown away by how Fowler's played, especially for how much they've paid him. With that being said,
he's been trash.
Yeah, I don't know where, like, there's no youth to the defensive end position. I guess Kaminsky is what you're looking at, hoping, you know. I think Mariners looked well when he's played, but it's not enough to, like, really, you know, ignore the position. I think there's just so much need there, as there always is, and maybe under a different general manager and head coach, they'll be able to fix it. But it just seems like this constant thing every year where that's, you know, one of their top needs, if not their top. Mm-hmm. Well, and they can't sign them either. I mean, like, I wanted to be wrong, because I was super pessimistic when they signed Fowler. Like, I was literally saying, you know, on Twitter and stuff, that he was just a product of playing next to the best defensive tackle in football, Aaron Donald, and that's kind of what it showed. I mean, Grady Jarrett is right there, but it's just, you know, you had Clay Matthews even getting, like, 8 sacks with that team, and he hasn't even been on a roster this year. I don't know. I think that position's super weak, as it always seems to be, and, you know, that's my my answer.
Yeah. I do want to, we'll get to Eric's here in just a second. I want to read off another donation from George Costanza again. $3. Thank you, brother. George says, wanted to point out something important that we have discovered this season. Glad TD and Quinn didn't overpay Austin Hooper. Hurst has shown that most tight ends will be successful with Ryan. Also, thus far, Chase Young is not Nick Bosa. Terrell could end up being the better pick. Yeah, I mean, Chase Young had that injury midseason, and he hasn't quite been the same. I think, like, early on, he was on that, like, crazy tear. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, Terrell looks like a good pick, but it's early.
So you've already closed the door on how good Chase Young can be.
I mean, I haven't, but yeah. I mean, no,
whoever.
Yeah, I mean, George is down on Chase Young. Seems like so.
Already after 9 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say don't get off the Chase Young train yet. No. You know, I mean, Terrell could still be a very good pick. Like maybe, you know,
Didn't he have like 2 sacks in the season opener?
Yeah, he started off real hot and then had that kind of, I think.
Hey, that's more than what Dante Fowler's at all year.
And defensive ends, they usually don't hit that, like, oh, damn, they're that good, like, till, like, the second or third year. Yeah. Probably the third year.
Yeah.
But you also don't see edge rushers get 2 sacks in their season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Like, I'm not sleeping on him.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Eric, I want to
get you. Just wait till like year 3 and he's going to be, you know, up there with the best of them. Yeah. Like,
I still would have taken Chase Young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know, we'd rather have, you know, Young, but would it have been worth trading the entire draft class and a first this year and a second this year trade up for Chase Young?
I mean, the jury's still out on that. At this point, it looks like maybe not. But
the jury's out. But right now, I'm saying I'd rather have Terrell than trading all of that for Young.
Remember, we were all like, a lot of people were talking about them moving up for
CJ Henderson, right?
Henderson and who was it? The Lions got from
Akuda.
Yeah, like, Akuda.
Terrell's grading better than both of them. Yeah. He's looked better than both of them. Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know how to feel, but, like, I'm excited now. And Eric, you know, kudos to him, was one of the people that was like, hey, calm down. Like, don't pay attention to, you know, that college football championship game or whatever where he apparently, like, was bad.
But... Oh, yeah. People way overrated that college football game. Yeah. I mean, I understand
that's
why.
The only game they've ever seen him play for most people.
Everybody watched that game. Everybody had an opinion on AJ Terrell. And honestly, he played well for half of that game. So, like... You know, I think that was really overrated. But yeah, Eric, I definitely wanted to give Eric a chance to answer that question too. Like, what? I think it's edge for you as well, Eric. But yeah, what's your take on the biggest Falcons need?
Actually, no. Their biggest need is just defensive playmakers.
Any playmaker.
Any playmakers. You know, if they were to get a game changing edge, that'd be great. If they were to get, you know, a free safety that has a nose for the ball and you know, is able to create takeaways, that would be great. If they were able to get a corner opposite Terrell that's able to do that, that would be great. They just need guys on defense that can make plays. And I'm not talking making the traditional tackle on third down and get off the field. Like, no, the game's on the line. They need a turnover. They need a sack. They need something. They need playmakers like that on that defense, and they don't really have it.
Yeah, I agree. They just need playmakers. I mean, honestly, they just need good players. I mean, Edge obviously would probably be the biggest impact because they have, like, basically no one, right? But, I mean, yeah. I want to get to some of these questions, too. I know you guys had some coming in, and if you guys have more, feel free to get those in the chat as well. Kieran Welsh asked, do you think the Falcons are keep Gurley past this year? I personally think that they will not. Because Gurley's going to want some sort of contract. The Falcons probably can't afford to give him any sort of contract. So I think not. I suspect, you know, if they do get an offensive head coach, he's probably going to want to draft someone, you know, maybe late day 2, early day 3. Because we've seen you could get quality starters there. That's my thoughts on that. You guys have any opinions on Gurley's future with the team?
Yeah, I think he's going to.
I do not like the idea of paying a veteran running back. Gurley's probably going to want a payday.
Yeah.
Especially after I think he's in the top five in rushing yards this year. He's, what, second in rushing touchdowns. But he's only averaging, I think, 3.7 yards per carry, which isn't very efficient. He is in the top five, but that's mostly a product of Dirk Koetter running him so much, as much as he does, and running him on all those first and second downs. I don't think it'll be worth giving Todd Gurley that money. I don't like the idea of paying a running back, like, at all.
Either way.
Unless it's, like, a transcendent talent, but even then, it's, like, what we're seeing, like, just how easily the position can get hurt. You know, you're taking a lot of you're getting banged up a lot as a running back. We saw that with Saquon Barkley when the Giants took second overall. We're seeing it with Zeke. Like, you know, if you don't have that great offense around him, Ezekiel Elliott has struggled this season as well.
He
definitely not look like his normal self.
I think basically what we've seen, and I assume that this person that's coming in is a student of analytics, and, you know, if it's Bieniemy, and, like, the Chiefs know how to do this better than anyone. Like, they're experts at basically hitting the bargain bin for running backs and getting these just big contributors. And that's what the Falcons need to do. Like, they need to scour, you know, free agency for cheap, effective running backs. And they need to go out and probably get a guy, like, late on day two or early on day three to be their, you know, their nominal starter. But, like, between that guy and, like, there's so many good running backs available in free agency that get picked up for basically nothing. Like, you just have to be smart about who you pick up. Like, it's very doable. So, like, I get that, like, the Falcons haven't looked good in the run game. It's not because of their running backs. Like, I know people are like, oh, Quadri's not that great. And Ito, he's not that great. Like, these guys, I think, would be more than enough for Kansas City. Like, they would, like, I think Ito Smith would be, like, a great pass-catching back in Kansas City. Like, these players are more than good enough to be effective NFL running backs. It really just needs a scheme change more than anything. So I don't think we need to pay premium money or invest a premium pick for a running back. I mean, as fun as it would be to see Travis Etienne in Atlanta, like, I just don't think it's going to happen. Unless he's sitting there in the second round or something, but, like, I don't think that's going to happen either. So, you know, that would be cool, but I just don't really see it.
I just wanted to add also to kind of piggyback off that, you know, James Robinson, for example, he's fifth in carries this year. He has four less carries than Todd Gurley, but 100 more yards.
And he was undrafted.
And he's undrafted, yeah. So they're probably paying him close to nothing. You don't have to pay these top running backs. And even then, as Adnan mentioned, Gurley's numbers are super inflated because of volume. But he's not averaging, you know, he's averaging 3.7. He's not putting up great yards per game. He's 64.9, where you got, I mean, you know, the top right now with all the injuries and stuff, like Dalvin Cook's doing 119.3 yards per game. Derrick Henry's over 100. He's at, like, 105. But then you got Gurley at 64. Like, he's, you know, you can, it's easy to look at the touchdowns and stuff because they get to the goal line and he's good at that, but he's not, like, an elite back.
Super volatile. You can never judge a player based on touchdowns. Unless it's like a quarterback who's just like
It's flashy, so it's easy to look at and be like, oh, no. Nice.
Touchdowns for running backs are not a great stat to look at.
But they're not even using him correctly, too, because he usually, the Rams would always throw him the ball. He's on pace for, like, one of his fewest I think his worst season in terms of being a receiving back.
That's a Koetter problem.
But also last season he was the worst running back by PFF's grades in receiving.
He didn't do a great job.
He's not the running back from 2017 who was in the MVP race. It's like he has clear knee problems, which is another thing. Like, he's held up so far, but do you really want to sign up for that long term? Like, I absolutely don't. I don't want to spend cap space to keep Todd Gurley. Like, it's not like you're. No disrespect to the Georgia fans who are probably losing their minds at this conversation right now, but it's not exactly like you're spending to have some prize like top 10 running back on your team. Like, he's pretty inefficient.
That's definitely.
It's a great fantasy play, though.
I've been very satisfied with that pick in the fourth round. So, All right, let's see. We got East Coast Falcon asking who are our top five edge rushers coming out. Yeah, I mean, check out my piece on the Falcoholic 2. I break down like four guys, but I guess the guys that, like, I would say are like the top ones for me right now would be like Gregory Rousseau from Miami. He opted out, so he's not actually playing, but his tape last year was crazy. I'm sure Eric can attest to that. But Quiddy Pay from Michigan has been impressive. He's been playing. Patrick Jones from Pitt, I like him a lot. Hamilcar Rashid Jr., I like him quite a bit too, from Oregon State. Let's see, who would a fifth guy be? I mean, it's kind of like a take your pick thing. Like, I know like Quincy Roche from Miami is someone a lot of people like. I haven't really watched him. Carlos Basham Jr. is more like a day two guy, but just a reliable kind of edge two type of player, which would be more than the Falcons have at this point. So, I mean, I'd be open to that. But there's some names. I mean, in terms of like really top end talent, it's not really that sort of class. But, you know, there are certainly some guys there that they could go after. Let's see. Let's see. Yeah, we had one. ViralGraph56 asking, where do we think the Falcons will end up picking? Probably right around where they are now. Probably like right around 10.
Pick 32 honestly. After we win it all this season.
That ties in nextly to the other question. But, yeah, I mean, probably right around where they are now. You know, I would say like between 8 and 12 is pretty good range for them. I mean, if they win a bunch of games, they'll probably be picking like where they were last year. I think they're probably going to finish like 6 and 10, and they'll be in between 8 and 12. That's my opinion. What do you guys think?
I think 5 and 11.
Yeah. Okay.
So
it's a rough finishing schedule. It wouldn't shock me.
Which would put them right where they are now. Maybe 10. Maybe inside the top 10, but on the latter half. Hmm. 8 and 9 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can realistically, I'm going to say 6 and 10 as well. And but you know, the optimist in me is saying 10 and 6.
Come on, man.
So it could be either one. It could be either one of those.
It could be 3 and 13 or 10 and 6. I'm not sure. Somewhere between those two.
Somewhere in the middle between those.
Yeah.
You guys are doing this on purpose.
Yeah, we're just trying to get the hype train rolling here. All right. You know, can you blame us?
After we win our next four games in a row, you know, we'll be hot going into
like if they sweep the Saints, if they win like all those games and sweep the Saints, like up until they sweep the Saints, like I'll be on the train then. Like I'll be conducting that Falcons hype train at that point, because they'll be back to 500. So
yeah, Antonio Brown will probably be suspended by the time we play the Bucks. So
we should be good there. Yeah, we should be all good there. But I mean, someone did ask specifically, like, you know, what would have to happen for the Falcons to make the playoffs? Miracles that would have to happen.
A lot.
Too many things to get into at this point, but a lot of things would have to happen.
We getting COVID all at once.
Yeah.
Every other team being disqualified. It wouldn't have to be that bad. I mean, it's not like they're, like, really that far out of it, but, like, they need a lot of teams to basically, like, struggle.
A lot.
And they need to win almost all their games.
Yeah, and I mean, normally when you're talking about the Falcons and collapsing, you're not talking about other teams.
Yeah, yeah, they'd need other teams to pull Falcons type shenanigans for them to really have much of a chance. And yeah, like
because I just want to make the point, like just being completely serious for a second, the NFC is really good this year. Even with that extra wild card spot, I think it's those NFC West teams, like three of them are 6 and 3. So 6 and 3 is the last like wild card spot in the NFC right now, because you have the Bucks and Saints who both have 7 wins.
Yeah.
And you know, of course the Eagles will or the winner of the NFC
the NFC East
is gonna make it. So
they're gonna be like 5 and 11 in the playoffs, man. It's gonna be a disaster.
So this is not the year. I mean, definitely the NFC West teams are gonna cannibalize themselves, you know, for the most part down the stretch. But this isn't the season where I think 8 and 8 will make it as that like 7 seed. Like you're gonna have to win at least 9 games to get into that 7 seed.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I mean, the NFC is kind of a mess, but it's also like there's a lot of teams with winning records, so like it's gonna be difficult to really crack into that group. Like there's gonna be probably 3 playoff teams from the West, which, you know, That makes up for the fact that the East is a dumpster fire. So it's gonna be difficult.
Until the 49ers had all the injuries, like all four of those teams had winning records in that division.
Yeah.
Wasn't it the Seahawks that one year that went to the playoffs like 7-9?
Yeah,
that was a beastquake year. Yeah, and then they knocked out the Saints.
Yeah. Hey, as long like hey, I mean, if the Giants get in there and knock out the Saints, you know, I'd be okay with that.
The Panthers in 2014 made it at 7-8-1.
That's right.
And the Falcons would have made it at 7-9 had we won that last game of the season against them. And they beat the Cardinals, who started Ryan Lindley.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, what a long, strange season that was.
Yeah, that would have saved Mike Smith's job.
Probably, yeah. If they won that playoff game, that would have been like his second playoff win ever or something. sorry. Yeah, that would have been the third playoff win. Excuse me.
No, you're right. That would have been the second one.
That's right.
He beat the Seahawks in 2012.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot that they actually got all the way to the divisional that year. So that was been the second. Okay, yeah. Okay, so it was a good joke in retrospect. Guys. I know we've got more questions. It is getting a little bit late, though, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. I do appreciate everyone for getting those questions, and don't worry. We will have plenty of time going forward. We will get to as many of you guys as we can. We appreciate all of you guys for helping us with the discussion this evening. Before we get out of here, I do want to remind folks to throw a like. I know a lot of people have been doing that. Throw a like at the channel. Throw a like at the show. Help other people find us. And if you're not already subscribed to the channel, hit that subscribe button. You'll get notifications for when we post these shows and all that good stuff. So, next thing to do is to thank my wonderful co-host this evening. First off, Evan Birchfield. He's at Evan Birchfield on Twitter. Evan, anything you're working on you'd like to plug?
No. Just go to thefalcoholic.com.
All right, yeah. Check out thefalcoholic.com, folks. best source for all Falcons news, you know, hot takes. We have a little bit of everything. You know, it suits all comers. Also with us tonight, Eric Robinson at @_Eric_Robinson. On Twitter. Eric, anything that you're working on you want to let the people know about?
Yes. My column on Falcons coaching search continues. Just had one published, I believe it was yesterday, and it focuses on Brian Daboll, offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. So give that a look. And I'm also be on the lookout later this week also for the Saints preview.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Check that stuff out. Those are some good profiles on potential Falcons coaches. There's a lot of them that we're going to be considering, so those are a good place to start. Also with us tonight, Adnan Ekic @SayWhichWay on Twitter. Adnan, anything you're working on you want to let the people know about?
My weekly What If We Win and What If We Lose article is going to be going on Saturday. And, you know, I do the fantasy sudden dud after every game, so check that out. And also the Falcoholic, your one-stop shop. We have podcasts, we have live shows. It's a lot of work gets put into the website by a lot of great people. So check us out.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. And I'm Kevin Knight on Twitter @FalcoholicKevin. I've got, like I said, my draft prospect watch articles. It was safety today, Wednesday. I had corner yesterday and edge on Friday, and I'll be having more of those coming out over the next couple weeks too as we keep going here. But again, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back on Sunday after the game, hopefully to celebrate a win over the hated Saints, but I know you're more likely to be here if we lose. But you know, I think in this case we can make an exception, right, guys? Like, if we beat the Saints, everyone's gonna show up, you know, we're all gonna be real happy. But yeah, thank you. Yeah, sure. Yeah. We all know, you know, you just like to see us squirm on here, but we'd all like to see the Saints lose, and especially see the Falcons get that win over the Saints. So thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you to George Costanza and everyone else who's been donating to support the stream. We appreciate that. You guys are great, and you really help us out with this endeavor. So thank you guys. Like I said, Sunday we'll be back. Until then, enjoy the rest of your week. We will see you on Sunday.